Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Joining me today in the studios of CBS Interactive, 9MSN's Alex Parsons.
Good morning.
And regional TV marketing head honcho, Brian Hogan.
Good morning.
This week, new bosses for ACP Magazines and Nine Network. Melbourne's for relationships and Sydney's for business. Do you agree? In TV, the Rafters funeral delivers for Seven, but the national IQ test doesn't do it for Nine. And ACP gets its own behind-the-scenes reality show. Now, Alex and Brian are both here for the same reason. It's conference season, I guess. Regional TV has just held its annual gathering for the industry. And in a moment, I'll be talking about that to Brian Hogan, who is Regional TV Marketing's General Manager. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Tim.
And also with us today, Alex Parsons, who heads up marketing for 9MSN. So we'll start with Alex. Now, next week sees 9MSN's conference, Fast Forward 5. Now, probably we should start by explaining what that actually means.
Yeah, absolutely, Tim. It's actually 9MSN's Digital Marketing Summit, which many of your listeners will be familiar with. This year's theme is Fast Forward 5. And so what we're trying to do is we're going to show marketers and agencies and pretty much everyone in digital where we see the future going in digital.
And in so, 5 years' time, presumably.
Over the next 5 years, absolutely. And so it's going to be an interesting day. We've got a huge amount of speakers lined up for the day. We've got some really fun events, and I'll talk you through those in a minute.
Because one of the things that you've announced this week, because obviously it's sort of been over the last 2 or 3 weeks, I guess you've been revealing details of it, is I'm quite taken with the idea of the you have to tell me the correct name, but the digital marketing brain of the year. What's the correct
name? The digital showdown.
The digital showdown.
And so what we've done is we've asked all of the agencies to provide a representative from themselves to compete in a game show type concept. And it's a bit like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire concept, and it's being hosted by Kerri-Ann Kennelly, so it'll be a lot of fun. And so pretty much the agencies will be up against each other. There'll be two rounds. The first round will be sort of a quick fire questions, and we'll whittle it down to two final contestants, which will play off against each other. And the prize for the winning contestant is $300,000 media buy, $200,000 on 9MSN, and $100,000 on the Nine Network to go to a charity of their choice. As well as, you know, obviously the contestant themselves needs to have something as well. So we've got a trip to Cannes for next year.
Very nice too. So all of the there's a lot of glory to be had, but also humiliation for whoever comes last.
Well, there's two rounds, so there'll be a few that that come out together, and so there won't be sort of a single, you know, number 10 or number 9 or anything.
Well, that's
like that.
Disappointing.
Well, they're putting a lot on the line, and so I think it's going to be very interesting to see who's the, we've coined it the smartest digital person in Australia. And so the range of questions are really interesting, all about digital, obviously, and not restricted only to 9MSN. And we, you know, it's just going to be a highlight of the day.
There are some interesting formats because you've also got that sort of debate format as well, where you have a panel of, is it 3 people, 4 people?
Yeah, we've got 4 people. So we've got the Great Debate. So we've got Tony Four, who is a independent digital media advisor,
former boss, of course,
former boss of mine, former CEO of 9MSN, very smart digital individual. We've got John Murray, managing director of Mitchell's Communications. We've got Richard Dummel, the vice president of ad sales for Greater Asia Pacific for Microsoft, and we've also got Andrew Morrell, who's the general manager of channel marketing at Commonwealth Bank. So they're going to be debating, and it's hosted by Paul Fisher, CEO of IAB. So they're going to be debating a range of topics across the digital media landscape, and you know, knowing those 4 people, they've all got a perspective, they've all got a voice, they've all got something to say.
So normally, when people come along plugging these events, of course, they're trying to flog tickets. It's slightly different in your case, isn't it? And that presumably one has to be invited to come along in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, there is a limited number of seats available for this event, and so it is an invitation only event. We do have. You know, we're not flogging anything per se. We're just trying to enlighten.
Apart from your wares, of course. But
we're just trying to really take our leadership position and really help people understand where we see digital going in the future in Australia. And so, you know, often with these things, you don't get the opportunity really to talk en masse and to bring the type of speakers that we're bringing in from all around the world, really, to put forward their perspectives on where things are going.
Well, we'll talk about some of the other speakers in a moment. So this is Sydney. How many people?
Yeah, so we're going to have five or six 600 people. It's at Luna Park next Wednesday, the 17th of November, and kicks off from about 8:30 in the morning.
And this is something that 9MSN has previously done in other years as well, but not for a while.
Yeah, we haven't done it for the last couple of years. The previous time that we did it was 2007, and that was down at the International Passenger Terminal.
And is it something you could see yourself doing similar events for other markets like Melbourne or Brisbane or whatever in future years?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, it's just the size and the scale of the event sort of sometimes limits us to the ability to put it on into one market. And we have invited guests up from Melbourne and from Brisbane, and also actually we've invited guests from New Zealand as well. Obviously, 9MSN is both Australia and New Zealand. Mm. So we're bringing those guests in so that they don't miss out.
So who are the other sort of major speakers, kind of the keynotes, so to speak?
Yeah, so just to sort of run through the list of keynotes, obviously Joe Pollard, CEO of 9MSN, will open it, and she will talk through the event as well. We're lucky to have Carolyn Everson, who's the head of Microsoft's digital advertising globally, coming in for the event. We'll also have Jeffrey Cole, who's the director of the Centre for the Digital Future. So he'll give a lot of understanding about consumer trends in the future.
So he's the sort of future gazer person.
Yeah, the topic of his talk is the future of the digital consumer. He has talked at previous events for us as well, and he's widely regarded as having a very interesting perspective on the digital consumer.
And I always love getting hold of these kind of talks a few years later, because they never actually pan out, do they? You know, those predictions that, you know, we'd all be in hovercrafts by 2012 or whatever.
It's interesting you mentioned the hovercraft as the, you know,
is this one of the key predictions?
Back to the Future predicted they'd have a hoverboard in 2015, so it's been a bit of an internal joke over the last few weeks as to whether or not we really will have the hoverboard in 2015.
Well, I would like to think that the company is willing to stake its reputation and make a prediction.
We don't necessarily produce products like the hoverboard. However, some of the things that they're talking about and some of the things they have spoken about in the past aren't too far from where we are today. And so I think that they'll be, you know, grounded in where we have been and also where we are going. Other speakers are Linda Kovarik, who's the founder and head of strategy at Creative Sherpa. She's going to talk about the future of the pitch and the big idea. We've also got a couple of people from Wieden & Kennedy, so Daniel Shenayak and Alberto Ponti, and they're going to talk about... they're going to be talking about the big idea.
Yeah, so Wieden & Kennedy, they're US-based. I think they were the guys behind the Old Spice thing, weren't they?
Wieden & Kennedy were, yeah, and they've also done a huge amount of work with Nike and a whole bunch of other work as well. So very, very, very credentialed individuals, and they're going to be speaking about some very interesting stuff. We've also got Brian Monaghan speaking, who's from IPG Media Labs, about brand influence. And then we're going to follow it up with the Great Debate. So it's quite a jam-packed program. However, with the Great Debate, and also with the Digital Showdown, plus we have an innovation showcase as well. So we'll actually have touchy-feely, hands-on, how we sort of see 9MSN and our products and our brands evolving over the next 5 years as well. I think it's going to be a really interesting, a really enlightening day for digital marketers to understand not only where we feel we're going over 5 years, but also how they can adapt to consumer change over that period as well.
And commercially, how do you see the online market at the moment? How is it going?
Oh, absolutely fantastically. I mean, it's double-digit growth in the online market. You would have seen the figures that were released this week.
From the IAB.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going extremely well.
And what is driving the growth?
In terms of the growth, I think, you know, it's just sort of we've come out of a difficult period last year. So there's a lot of growth in the market, and I think, you know, this time of the year as well is helping fuel that growth.
And is it kind of category specific? Or?
So in terms of our brand growth, it's across the board. In terms of our search growth, it's also across the board. So it's pretty good, actually.
And is spend coming for any kind of industry categories, you know, whether it's... You know, I don't know what's growing, property, automotive or whatever.
Yeah, I mean,
whatever.
The traditional categories are strong, travel, finance, automotive and the likes. I think it's just the understanding that, you know, there has always been a lead of eyeballs in digital and there's been a lag of dollars in digital, and we're seeing some of that starting to catch up now. There still is a lag, mind you, so there's still a lot of room to go, but people are really starting to understand the power of brand in digital.
And how about video? How's that going?
Video is going gangbusters. You know, it's an area where we have a huge amount of demand and not quite as much supply as we would like, and so we're focused pretty heavily on that. But, you know, video is an area which is growing very significantly, albeit off a smaller base, but still massive growth.
And what are the other big kind of issues that the digital industry as a whole is grappling with? I guess measurement has been one of the ones that's been talked about a lot recently.
Yeah, unified measurement, and obviously we're working very closely with the IAB on pushing that forward, and we're completely behind their point of view on that. And, you know, that's probably the key one.
Where does 9MSN stand on the auto-refresh issue, which I guess kind of ties into measurement, this idea that a page refreshes and the ad refreshes as well, whether the user initiates it or not?
Yeah, so in terms of auto-refresh, there are some sites that we do have it on, and that's sites where consumers expect to have content regularly refreshed, such as news, weather, sports results and the likes. Typically on most of our sites where that's not a consumer requirement, we don't have auto-refresh, and we're in line with the IAB on that particular point.
Sure. Excellent. Well, if there's one thing to come along for the conference, what would you say it is? What's your highlight going to be?
I think overall, just to get a better understanding about what's moving and what's going to be changing in the future. So from a business perspective and from a personal perspective, I think it's going to be really interesting to see both the panel and the digital showdown. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Well, good luck with the event, Alex.
Yeah, thank you very much, Tim.
Thanks.
Cheers.
We now turn to Brian Hogan. Now, Brian, as I introduced you, you're the boss of regional TV marketing.
Yes.
Most people within the TV industry, everybody will know what that organisation is. But for those from other parts of the industry, maybe firstly explain what your remit is.
Sure. Basically, we're the industry marketing body for free-to-air TV in regional. We are sponsored by the regional networks, WIN, Prime, Southern Cross, NBN. And so we do a job pretty similar to other media marketing groups like the Newspaper Works, the Magazine Publishers Association, Radio Marketing Bureau. And essentially, we're trying to inform the market, i.e. marketers, media agencies, about the opportunities for advertising, brand growth, ROI, and regional. Essentially because in terms of the media selection process, often regional TV follows Metro TV as a sort of second option, if you like.
And do you think that's partly because all of the media planners are generally they're in the Metro TV areas themselves, so they don't necessarily think of it? Is that one of the issues?
I think it probably is, actually. And not only that, but the fact that so many people from in media agencies now come from overseas. So there's not a particularly well-rounded view of what regional Australia is like. I think it has, to be fair, it has changed an awful lot over the last few years. When I started doing this job 10 years ago, I think there was a general perception that regional equal rural, that it was country, small towns. And I think gradually, as the reality of that has substantially changed, people's awareness and understanding of it has changed
as
well. So
who would be a typical regional TV viewer?
Very much like a typical viewer in the metropolitan markets. We're talking about your average income Aussie family with kids, young people, older people. It's essentially a similar range of viewing than what you get on free-to-air TV
They're
in the
still
metro markets.
Commuting to work, shopping at Coles?
Not to the same extent in terms of commuting. I mean, there are some differences, but certainly their buyer behaviour, their disposable income, you know, whether they're in a family or a single home setup, is broadly similar. There are some definite demographic distinctions between regional. We tend to have more families. The families tend to have a few more, you know, a little bit more children, so they'd be more likely to have three kids as opposed to two kids. We have a higher index of baby boomers and retirees because naturally people, you know, quite like to retire to regional Australia at a certain point. At the sort of family side and the retiree baby boomer side, we do have a higher index. But in terms of the individual, so if you looked at a mum with kids in Bankstown or the Hills area of Sydney, she would be very, very similar to a mum living in Tamworth or Foster or the Central Coast.
Now, last year, certainly for Metro TV, you know, many people sort of kind of carnage for the market in terms of, you know, the drop in revenue. And the big debate was about how much it was just part of the economic cycle, how much it was changing habits by consumers. Was there as much upset and upheaval within regional TV in terms of revenues?
No. We did lose revenue year on year, and I think that was the case with all media categories. But regional TV revenue went down by, I think, something like 4% year on year, whereas the metro revenue went down by something like 11 or 12. Don't quote me on that, but that's the sort of number. And I think what we've found over the last few years is that regional TV revenue has been more stable than metro. And I think a lot of that is to do with the fact that about 40% of regional revenue comes from local advertisers. So those local advertisers, be they car dealers or retailers, they have to keep advertising. And in regional Australia, small businesses can afford to advertise on TV. So that sort of bedrock of revenue is always there. And so that's what sort of largely saw regional TV through the GFC in better shape, and this year we're up about 10%. So our growth this year is not as strong as Metro, but of course that's because they're on a more volatile cycle. Over the last 5 years, we've put on additional share out of the total advertising market nationally. So the fundamentals for regional TV seem to be stronger than they are perhaps for the capital cities, and that's to do with issues around how consumers view media, connection with local TV in terms of local content, and so on.
And do you see the free-to-air secondary digital channels, is that going to be in time an opportunity for regional TV?
Oh, very much so. Well, it already is. The rollout of the multi-channels in regional has been initially was lagging the metros by a couple of months, but is now is very not quite simultaneous with metro, but is very close behind it. And the major the digital channels that were launched early, they're now able advertising can be bought at those at individual regional market level. So those are local advertising opportunities. And I think the really interesting thing, and we may talk about this more later, is that the multi-channels in regional are an opportunity to develop more local content and for advertisers to engage, because obviously there's greater opportunity to talk to regional people through those multi-channels than they ever had before.
And presumably that at that regional level, particularly the secondary channels, it actually becomes the sort of price point at which small businesses can actually get their themselves on television.
That's true. I think that's actually the case now. I mean, if you go to any regional market, you will find local businesses advertising. I mean, they won't be necessarily advertising in the peak viewing time, but certainly quite small local businesses can advertise off-peak at very affordable rates. And you've got to bear in mind that the smallest signal that you can buy advertising space in regional can be a market the size of the Central Coast, or it could be a market in Victoria of a couple of 100,000 people. So, you know, given that TV is based on cost per thousand, it doesn't cost an absolute fortune for a small business to get access.
Sure. Well, as I kind of alluded to at the start of the podcast, you put on an annual kind of gathering yourselves.
Yeah,
for,
we do.
And I guess the center of gravity of that is, would be media agencies and marketers. That would be your
very
key audience.
Very much so, yeah.
So you've just held your most recent one, which was by all accounts sounds very pleasant, in Byron Bay. What were the kind of highlights of the conference?
The theme of the conference was the future of regional media, which of course is a pretty broad theme. And so we had the speakers tended to identify with the changes that are going to happen in regional media over the next couple of years centered around the NBN, and how that's going to mean that consumers have access to digital media and TV media through a range of platforms. And the sort of linking thought, if you like, was that the local content, be it advertising, local news, sports coverage, is absolutely at the core of the future of regional TV, because it's a very unique, quality about regional TV, whereas national TV, pay TV can't actually deliver that. So it was almost a case of saying, regardless of what the delivery mechanism is for TV in regional, the fact that it has local content really engages with viewers and pretty much underwrites its future. So I think most people were talking about how other media platforms like digital could be brought together with free-to-air TV to build those local communities and so on.
It's interesting you mentioned NBN as well. So you'd see, for instance, IPTV as being something that would actually help regional TV get the message to viewers, for instance?
Most definitely. I think if the regional networks have a, control over other digital platforms and are able to build communities around their local areas via TV and via what they're doing in terms of content, that is a massive opportunity. And so, for sure.
And who were the standout speakers for you at the conference?
Well, we had a few. We had David Chalk, who's a consumer researcher. He talked about how an interesting theory in that regional is effectively now the social and cultural leader for Australia. And he quoted some interesting examples of that around the federal election, around spending power. And basically, he drew the analogy that about 20% of the Australian population essentially live in the inner city metro enclaves, and then the rest of the population either live in the outer suburban fringe of the capital cities or in regional, and there's really no significant difference between the suburban metro fringe and regional, and those are the people who are setting the agenda in terms of consumer attitudes, political attitudes, and so on. So we're in the majority,
yeah,
for once.
Because that's it, because I guess the media agencies would like to think that it's kind of, Surrey Hills no. scarf-wearing, latte-drinking hipsters who are setting the...
Sadly, they're in the minority, but they probably quite like it that way anyway. So from an advertiser's point of view, you know, if you're looking to get an insight and understanding into... there's no such thing as the average consumer, but within a given target group, what are the values and attitudes of that group? You could just as easily look at regional Australia to get a real feel for what's going on and what the future is going to bring.
Do you think there are media agency planners who, you know, have literally never met this target audience?
No, I don't think that's the case. You'd be surprised how many people I meet in my job who work in the metro markets but who grew up in regional or went to union regional. And so it's nice that certainly within the Australian professionals, there is that connection to what regional Australia is. I think part of the problem is that a lot of people's exposure to regional Australia tends to be around holiday times when, you know, you're having fun and you go to somewhere, little town on the coast. It doesn't actually represent the majority of people in regional who now live in Newcastle, Wollongong, the Gold Coast, Canberra, so major cities. But it's good that they have that experience, but, you know, you need to obviously broaden your view of what regional is really like.
And I suppose that's also the question, when regional becomes almost metro, because there will be a time when Newcastle is a classic example, isn't it? That will become metro in its own right at some point.
It will. And that's the truth of it, is that the two cultures and the two areas are ultimately merging into a sort of a homogenous mass. And there will always be a rural dimension to regional Australia. So our networks don't just broadcast to the more urban areas. They broadcast to the genuinely rural outback and farming parts of Australia, which is still a really significant market, but in numbers, probably about 20% of our total audience would fit into that sort of rural category. Hopefully that will never change and lose its character, but on the coast, yes, it's inevitably going to become essentially a suburban landscape.
Now, other speakers, we've already talked this morning about futurists and hoverboards, and I think you had Ross Dawson, didn't you?
We did. We had Ross Dawson, who's an international speaker, and he basically drew some examples around how... local media companies who can create content across a number of platforms, whether it's TV and print and digital, and leverage that content across as many different platforms as they can, and also look at opportunities to monetize their consumer base, so develop, you know, separate business ideas around products or networked social groups and so on. So that was a pretty strong concept, and I think a lot of people would say, yes, that's inevitably the way media companies need to go. They need to own as many different platforms as they can, not necessarily financially own, but have content owning them. And in regional, his point was that was a better opportunity than in most places, because you have got those distinct community groups that exist in regional that don't exist in the capital cities.
And which other speakers or thoughts kind of stood out for you?
I would say the other person who spoke extremely well and was very interesting. I mean, look, on a technical level, we had Nick Durant, who's director of The Exchange, who I think you've had in one of your Mumbrella days.
Yes, Nick, he's at Mindshare's The Exchange, isn't
exactly
it?
Right, yeah. He basically presented an analysis of the impact of multi-channel viewing in regional, and he found that essentially, this, similar to metro markets, the overall level of viewing free-to-air TV has grown, and that while there's no significant difference between metro and regional, I mean, that might be news in itself for some people, that the power of TV was very much growing, and that, again, he made the point that, you know, the opportunity for the regional networks is to develop content into those multi-channels.
And do you see disparities in the type of programme that's consumed in regional versus metro? Now, the reason for asking that is I remember just looking at the data a couple of times for The X Factor, for instance, and just seeing in different capitals, you know, it was wildly popular in one sort of first or second, and in another it was 18th for the night or something. Yeah. Do you see that same
sort
of thing?
You do a bit. I mean, the areas where you'd see it frequently would be in sports content, for example. So, I mean, you look at regional New South Wales, regional Queensland for an event like the State of Origin, and the numbers are just unbelievable. Similar with a lot of major sporting events, getting more into you know, the regular programming content that you're talking about. If there is a reference to that particular market, it could be significant. So, I mean, going way back when to a program like McLeod's Daughters, an obvious cultural regional reference, used to do very well. I think now you look at some programs that have more of a family skew will tend to do better in regional Australia, because it reflects the slight demographic skew that you have in those markets. So I don't think it's fundamentally different, but I think in the same way that you get differences between Sydney and Melbourne, local cultural references and context always draw viewers in for obvious reasons.
Well, next up, we'll be talking about new bosses for ACP and Nine. So this week, new PBL boss David Gingell announced two major promotions. Nine's Jeff Brown has become the network's national MD, and ACP Magazine's Phil Scott is the new MD there, so two internal promotions. Now, Brian, you're well inside the TV industry. Do you see Jeff Brown's appointment as a good one for the Nine Network and, as a good one for the TV industry as a whole?
Well, look, to be perfectly honest with you, Tim, I don't know Jeff personally, and I'm probably not best qualified to comment on that, other than I think it's been a really interesting week or 2 weeks for free-to-air TV generally, and the fact that the focus is back on our media category and clearly there's companies and big players and big money involved, it can only be a good thing.
Yes.
And gives us all a great sense of confidence going forward.
Because I guess the other part of the conversation has been about the changes at 10 with James Peck and with Lachlan Murdoch both coming on the board at 10. Do you see that as having implications for the regional side of things?
Well, yes, insofar as any changes in content or strategy at a network like 10 clearly will impact the 10 affiliate network in regional, which is Southern Cross. So there's no question about it. I mean, having said that, I think it's clearly too early to say. The other thing, just interestingly, I was having a conversation yesterday with the sales director of Southern Cross, and again, their ratings in regional have been stronger than the comparable 10 numbers in the metro market. So it doesn't always follow that, while the overall trend will be similar, he did specifically say, yes, look, we're not doing it quite as badly as the metros. And so we'll see what happens there.
Well, next we'll be talking about the differences between Sydney and Melbourne. Pigsy, you came to Melbourne to seek your fortune.
I did. I don't know if I got it yet. The Sydney-Melbourne thing fascinates me. I don't really care about Sydney very much. I think Melbourne's fantastic. I think the clients here, talking about with our Sydney agents about clients in Sydney, I think the clients in Melbourne are a dream. They're loyal. They're intelligent. They take the time to build relationships with agencies. They don't go to pitch for any artificial or knee-jerk reason. And I think the work coming out of Melbourne, the creative work coming out of Melbourne, is extraordinary. And it's interesting. We're working with a client in Sydney, and they've actually got a headquarters here in Melbourne, but they've also got a headquarters in Sydney. So we're working with the marketing execution people in Sydney. But there's a real conversation about bringing it back to Melbourne, which again, for all of the right reasons, to have a better relationship and partnership. So I think Melbourne, from what I've experienced, will continue to be a very strong place to do business in as a creative business. And I think the reason for that is there are clients here who are here for the long term and want to be with their agencies and partners for the long term.
Frankie?
For us, I think it depends on what kind of career you want to have. And the way we put it is, in Sydney, you win the business and then you build a relationship. And in Melbourne, you build the relationship and then you win the business. If you're a good salesperson and you want to do lots of selling, go and work in Sydney. If you want relationships and deliver great work with a client, work in Melbourne.
So that clip was from Umbrella's recent Question Time in Melbourne, where we debated the differences between doing business in Melbourne and Sydney. Now, Brian, I mean, I guess those are a couple of the markets that you have to talk to the market from. So this thought that in Melbourne the relationship comes first, in Sydney you can do business first and then build the relationship later, is that an experience that you recognise?
Yeah, it is. And I almost expected that comment to come up, and I was chuckling to myself quietly when it did. There is a distinct difference. There's no question about it. People are more collegiate in their relationships, particularly in my area of operations, which is media agency and media owner. I think in Sydney, the relationship can be at times adversarial, whereas in Melbourne, everyone's a little bit matey. They're working together more as a team. And I think that essentially represents the relationship basis of the market down there. I think the other thing is that people who work in Melbourne tend to stay there. They frequently come from Melbourne and they stay there for life, whereas people in Sydney are, a significant number are either from another city or they're from overseas. So for whatever reason, there's a slightly different cultural mix there. And it's not quite as, it's a little bit more hard-nosed and killer instinct in Sydney, I would say.
Well, next, a funeral on rafters pulls in the viewers. So it was an interesting week in television. One of the big deals was the funeral of Mel Rafter, which raked in over 2 million Metro viewers for Seven, and actually on the same night pushed the national IQ test on Nine down, well down on the most watched list. So in 2002, it was the most watched programme of the year. In 2010, it was the ninth most watched programme of the night. And also with TV, the X Factor has dropped below the million mark for the first time since the season began. So let's focus on the positives, Brian. Back to the Rafters. I'm guessing that sort of warm family show is probably the sort of thing that actually rates quite well in regional Australia.
Yeah, it does go very well consistently. And I can't tell you what the numbers were off the top of my head, but it would have rated its socks off, no doubt at all.
What, stylistically, I mean, is it a cliche to think, family drama, therefore we'll do well in regional? Is that a cliche or is there some truth to that?
Well, it is a bit of a cliche, but I think it's largely true. I mean, I don't think it's just a regional thing. I mean, as I was saying earlier, I mean, this is the sort of viewing that appeals to mainstream Australia. And, I mean, insofar as regional is the, representative of the mainstream values of Australia, yes, it will certainly do well. And whereas the majority of people in regional will fit that broad mold, there will be a percentage in perhaps the capital cities who don't. So programs like that do tend to do better in regional.
And what do you personally like to watch? What are your personal viewing habits?
Ah, well, that's a tricky question. I certainly like watching Mad Men. That'll be one of my favourite shows. I try to catch up on HBO series that have appeared, things like Deadwood, for example, that is on the ABC in terms of commercial TV. I have been watching Iron Chef, actually, because I've always followed that series previously. So,
and it was on SBS before, yeah, wasn't it? The overseas.
Very
version,
interested,
yes,
to see how the Metro networks have handled the production of that and what the changes they've made.
It's funny, isn't it? Because it's one of those things, it's very hard to tell whether it's, the fact that the numbers maybe haven't been quite what Seven would have wanted. It's hard to tell whether it's just because there's so much cooking content now. Obviously, we've got MasterChef, Junior MasterChef, we have My Kitchen Rules, whether it's actually just one more cooking show or whether it's just hasn't yet captured people's imagination.
I suspect it's the latter. I think they've actually done a really good job with it, and I'm comparing it to the original Japanese version and the American incarnation that was also on. I think they've broadened its appeal a little bit in terms of how they've presented the show. And it could be that, look, maybe it is just one more cooking show, but I think it's a different format, and given a chance, it could capture people's imagination. So I think it needs a couple more weeks. Hopefully they stick with it.
I'm sure they will, yeah. I guess the investment has been such that, that they will do as well. And what about mornings? Do you watch much in the way of morning television?
I'm afraid I don't. I confess here and now publicly, I'm a Radio National listener. I like Frank Kelly.
There are many of them, aren't there? Well, next, ACP goes for reality TV. So magazine publisher ACP will soon be the subject of a behind-the-scenes documentary. Now, we've already seen this elsewhere. Marie Claire in the US has been the subject of one. Glamour magazine in the UK, which is sort of hasn't yet launched in Australia, but may do at some point, fashion-focused again. Brian, is that wearing your consumer hat? Are you likely to be tuning in to watch the adventures of the good,
yeah,
folk of ACP?
Absolutely. I think any sort of fly on the wall documentary or inside view into the industry you work in has got to be pretty compelling. I'd give it a go, and if it's good quality viewing and a few good characters in there, I'll definitely get sucked in, I'm sure.
I guess that's the thing, isn't it? Because there seems to be a public appetite and interest in the media marketing industry. We've seen the likes of the Gruen transfer, for instance, suggest that the wider public's interest. What do you think it is that attracts
people? I don't know. I think with the Gruen transfer, it's that sense of understanding how the geniuses of the industry are manipulating our feelings and persuading us to do things we don't want to do. I think there's probably a fundamental mistrust of advertising, and they suspect that they're up to something tricky. So it's a great expose into the thinking, and at the end of the day, the advertising industry has actually come out of it really well, I feel, in terms of most of the people who are in it show that there's a genuine thought process going on there. I think with this particular idea, Park Street, I suppose if they have the, there will be a combination of business intrigue, the glamour of the fashion world and the media world, and then hopefully the sort of personality clashes that you get a la Apprentice or any of those other sort of business shows. So it's all going to be a case of how good of a job do they do.
And it's interesting, you mentioned the sort of the trickiness of otherwise of the advertising industry. You worked in advertising agencies yourself.
Yes,
before you moved this side.
But my mother thinks I played piano in a brothel.
That's exactly, because it's a more honourable profession. Isn't it? What, having kind of worked, I guess, on the sort of within the media sales side and within the advertising world, which is the more attractive career opportunity, do you think?
If I was completely honest, I'd say working in the advertising world is way more fun and probably is suited to somebody in their 20s and maybe early 30s. I think subsequent to that, if you're looking for a slightly more stable existence, you'd probably want to be working on the media owner side.
And you were involved in co-founding a couple of ad agencies.
That's right.
There was the Holistic Agency in Sydney and GBH Advertising in London. Yeah. And what's become of those? Have they evolved into...
Oh, no. They were small businesses. They ceased to exist after the partners moved on to other things.
They couldn't manage without you.
Right.
Well, that is where we have to leave it today. You can read more about all of the stories we've been talking about today at mumbrella.com.au. And, of course, you can follow Mumbrella on Twitter. Thank you to my guests, Alex Parsons and to Brian Hogan.
Thank you, Tim.
And thank you also to CBS Interactive for use of their studios. Production was by Georgina Pearson. That was the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Toodle-pip.